You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The border dispute continues between Texas and the Biden administration after Texas on Friday defied a federal deadline to allow federal agents into a park near the border. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas said earlier Friday the state is doing what it needs to do.
Well, I would say to President Biden, you say you want to secure the border, you can prove it by getting out of our way here. You don't need to be here.
There were nearly 250,000 arrests at the Mexican border in December. The border, a major campaign issue, and today President Biden's campaigning in South Carolina. On the Republican side, South Carolina's where former President Trump hopes to knock Nikki Haley out of the race. He's campaigning today in Nevada, a day after a New York City jury ordered him to pay a writer $83 million in defamation damages. He's vowed to appeal. And the U.S. and Iraq held a first session of talks in Baghdad aimed at winding down the U.S. coalition in Iraq. This is ABC News. A sports and entertainment icon is stepping down after a sexual misconduct lawsuit.
Vince McMahon resigning from the WWE's parent company one day after a former employee filed a federal lawsuit against him and another former executive alleging serious sexual misconduct, including that she was offered to a star wrestler for sex. McMahon stepping down from his position as executive chairman of TKO Group Holdings, the parent company of WWE. Despite his resignation, McMahon has denied wrongdoing. Mark Remillard, ABC News.
Former New Orleans Saints star Will Smith was shot and killed in New Orleans almost 8 years ago in a traffic dispute. After midnight, a jury convicted Cardale Hayes of manslaughter in a retrial. Hayes faces up to 40 years in prison. And the world's largest cruise ship embarks on its maiden voyage today. The Royal Caribbean's Icon of the Seas, nearly 1,200 feet long. It carries close to 10,000 people. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Some days, my active psoriatic arthritis makes it hard to get in the game. Now, the ball is in my court. Thanks to treating my skin and joints with SkyRizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150 milligram injection for adults.
Nothing is everything.
SkyRizi helps with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue. For those who also have plaque psoriasis, 90% clearer skin is possible with just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to SkyRizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
With SkyRizi, there's nothing like clearer skin and better movement, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about SkyRizi and visit SkyRizi.com or call 1-866-SKY-RIZI to learn more.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. More Americans are earning college degrees and making more money. But as Mike Moan reports, some groups are not doing as well as others.
The Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce says between 2010 and 2020, the proportion of U.S. residents with degrees increased by nearly 7 percentage points, leading to $14 trillion in additional net earnings over workers' lifetimes. However, Center Director Tony Carnevale says even though all racial groups saw positive movement, there was no substantial change in narrowing gaps.
What we have here is a race in which everybody is running faster, but no group is really changing their position in the race.
He says that undermines efforts to establish racial and economic justice. According to state-level data within the report, Wisconsin mirrored national progress with a 7 percentage point increase in degree attainment. The racial gap narrowed for Latino adults but widened for Black adults. If the U.S. wants to get serious about eliminating these disparities, Carnevale says it starts with creating an even playing field in early childhood education and K-12 schools.
Getting from childhood to a good job in the United States is a long walk, and you have to focus every step of the way, because the way the American system works is that people from less advantaged families begin to lose ground in the early grades.
Report authors say if all racial and ethnic groups had the same college degree attainment as white adults, the nation's workers would see an additional $11 trillion in lifetime earnings. The summary included data for associate, bachelor's, and graduate degrees. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Some fog to start the day. Cloudy skies, 37 this afternoon. For tonight, patchy fog, cloudy skies, 33. For Sunday, cloudy with a high near 36. On Monday, partly sunny, highs around 38. For Tuesday, chance of rain, 37.
It's 30 at our studios.
Broadcasting from atop the water tower.
Well, not really, but it sounds fun.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Amory's radio station.
Welcome to the Kripescast. This is the podcast where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest. I'm your host, Charlie Behrens, and here is today's episode. Hey, folks, welcome to the Kripescast. My guest today is musician, singer, songwriter, good dude, former classmate of mine, Brett Newsky, ladies and gentlemen. Brett is, he tours the world. He's been doing music for, geez Louise, probably over a decade now. Got some great tunes out there. Check him out, Brett Newsky.
He also was the ref in Dad versus Ref video that we did.
Yeah, he was also the ref in the Dad versus Ref. He's a very funny guy. We're going to do another sketch coming up here soon, which we kind of riffed on this podcast. So that was fun.
Deep tease.
You got it.
I didn't realize that you and Brett were classmates.
Yeah, we went to Orchard Lane together.
Yep.
Yeah.
And what kind of student were you in school?
I was like tangential teacher's pet. In other words, not the teacher's pet, but like someone who just didn't want to piss the teacher off. So someone who, like, if the teacher wasn't there, would be down to clown, but like would always be afraid of getting in trouble. I was just basically always afraid of getting into trouble.
That's so interesting.
Why?
I feel like I would have seen you as class clown for sure.
Definitely not.
And also like daydreamer.
Daydreamer, yes. Class clown, I had my attempts. I wasn't naturally funny.
I definitely was a teacher's pet for sure.
You know, that's so rude when you ask me a question and I don't turn it right back to you. I kind of had a feeling though, so I feel like I didn't need to ask.
But like, did the people at home know?
I think they did.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not. But I mean, you're very...
Have you seen School of Rock?
Yes.
You know where Summer is the class factotum with like the demerits and like the whatever. My parents always call me factotum because I was... I was like, if you give me a task, I will do it like really hard. I've always been like that. And so like I was the class... what was I? In fourth grade, she gave me basically, I was just essentially like, we all had jobs in fourth grade, like for the class.
Yeah.
And I was, it's not secretary, but it's something else where I like, literally was like her number two.
Oh my gosh. if you want to get to the teacher, you got to go through Kelly first.
Yeah. And then also like, that was the year we learned how to like write checks. And so like you would have, if you finish an assignment, you would get $20 for like the class bank or whatever. And then every time you would misbehave and talk, you would have to pay and write a check. Like it was kind of like a currency like within the class.
Wow.
And so I was so poor by the end of the year. Like you use that money, then she got like dollar store toys, like books, pencils, like
and
you would buy it at the end, cans of pops, all that stuff. And and I cashed out really quick because
that's funny. You couldn't
talk
take a loan
so much.
No one's gonna give you
so
a loan.
Much. No, nobody cared.
Well, you know what? Maybe if you weren't chit chatting so much, you'd have time to make friends who would loan you money.
I know. I have some best friends with the girl from my fourth grade class to this day, but she there's like cans of pop and like Magic Treehouse books to be bought. So it's like, we're not.
I get it. Like, I get it. You can't pass up place. A Barks. You do.
I know my place.
You do. Well, I am happy that hadn't traumatized you to the point where you're going to be talking about it on a podcast in 20 years. Yeah. With that, let's get to my conversation with Brett Newsky. So we go back, man.
Yeah, we went to second and first grade together.
At Orchard Lane.
Torture Pain Elementary.
Do you think it was torturous?
You know, like, we did talk about that.
Oh,
like,
yeah, we
first
did.
Grade, our teacher wouldn't let us drink water in the summer, like in the hot months. And this is like preschools having air conditioning and stuff. So kids would pretend to go to the bathroom so they could get water.
I did that.
Yeah,
I did that.
And I remember she would look out the hallway sometimes to see if kids were illegally sneaking water and then they'd get in trouble.
Yeah, weird. Can a guy hydrate?
Yeah.
You know,
that's dark. That's dark for a first grader. Like, first grade is so scary as it is to be, you know, I mean, that's kind of like prison law at Orchard Lane Elementary.
My favorite part at Orchard Lane was going through the backfield and catching grasshoppers.
Well, OK. Yeah.
Oh, you just said, okay, yeah, like I was one of those kids.
Yeah, I don't remember doing that, but I would pick the dandelions and then like suck the milk out of the bottom of the dandelions.
That's even weirder, dude.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird.
Yeah, that's, you know, was it good? No, it tasted like weed milk.
Yeah, it didn't have much taste. Yeah.
Yeah. I hope they didn't put pesticides on that one.
They for sure did. I mean, you and I are both... Like, think about all the outdoor football we did, and I assume your dad was a lawn guy as much as my dad. Like, he was always working on his lawn. I'm sure there was crazy pesticides on there to make it perfect, you know?
Yeah, I don't really understand that. My dad was like a mowing circles guy, you know? So, you know, if you're doing the circles, if you're just going in circles, you don't care about the lines. You don't care about much of that.
Okay. Yeah.
My dad didn't. I might get in trouble for saying this. I don't think he cared that much. I don't think I'd get in trouble for saying that. I don't know why I said that. I think I said that comedically, but then I think you took
me seriously. Like, he didn't care about you or his lawn.
The lawn.
Oh, the lawn. Okay.
That's why I was saying comedically, but I think you thought maybe I was thinking me.
My dad cared more about the lawn than us.
Oh, that's nice.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But he was like amazing at yard work. But he would also use yard work as a form of disciplinary measure for us. So we hated Saturdays because we knew Saturdays was yard work day, and he would make us work on the yard for several hours and work in like inefficient ways for the sake of our own discipline as kind of part of that. Like, he'd be like, all right, you pull these weeds, here's some gloves. And I'd be like, Dad, can I use this like weed pulling tool? He's like, you can't use that. That's weak. So he would like it like built discipline. And now looking back, I think it was actually useful, even though it pissed me off at the time. He always like instilled like a good amount, like a healthy amount of like Midwest don't be a culture, which I think is good to have. But he was also loving and said he loved us and gave us hugs and stuff. But he would be honest. If I was like, you know, the 10th guy on the AAU basketball team, he wouldn't sugarcoat it. He'd be like, Spielman burned you for 19. You can't play D. You got to play better. You're the 11th guy on the bench right now. And I would cry coming home from AAU games. But looking back, it's like, I'm glad he wasn't like one of those dads that's like, you're the best, son. You're going to be a star. You know?
Yeah. What time did you have to get up on the weekends?
Well, we get, you know, we would get like 30 minutes of grace time to play 8-bit Nintendo.
Oh, nice.
And then it was yard work time. You know, my mom was like, she'd feed us a nice brekkie, but then it was time to hit the green in the backyard.
I just remember like weekends, like it would be like if you were still in bed by, I think, like 7:30 or something, it was an issue.
Okay.
You know, so which like for a while I just thought was the normal thing. And then I got to college and when I was on my own and I would have to get up early.
Yeah.
Or I'd get depressed feeling like I wasted the day.
Yeah, like, of course. Yeah.
Like if I slept till like 11 or something.
That's probably good for your work ethic, you know?
I mean, it's got some benefits. It's also got probably some sleep pattern things because I wasn't just going to bed earlier.
Yeah.
But anyways,
it's depressing to wake up late. Like when the alarm doesn't go off, you wake up at 10, you know, you feel like I love getting up early because you feel like you're ahead of the world. like not everyone's awake. You kind of get the world to yourself, you know, even seeing the sun come up and you're drinking the caffeine drugs, and it's quite a buzz.
It really is. So yeah. Are you a late night guy or an early morning guy?
Early morning.
You
it's a
are.
Problem because the band often plays late. We got to be up till 2 a.m. and I hate it. I hate being in bars late. I love bars. I like drinking beer, but being in late, it's a problem.
Yeah. What time do you get up on your average day?
6:30.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for you, man. Good for you. I am not in that. I'm now in this phase, and I think it's because of doing comedy, where I'm up. My most creative time is between like 11 and 1 a.m.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's like I can write a lot of stuff at that time.
Oh, okay.
And then
caffeinated or just straight up?
No, normal.
Do people ever comment on like how jacked you've been getting?
No.
Okay. Sorry. Not good for comedy.
You think I've been getting jacked?
I don't. I mean,
you think
you look
I
like
haven't
been,
always been this jacked?
You might have always been this jacked, but this is the first time I've seen you not in a giant flannel.
I guess so. Maybe I gotta show off the guns more. Maybe increase my following with the you know, the younger gals and.
It's not very
fellas.
Wisconsin of you. It's not. Doesn't fit the.
Doesn't fit the brand.
Yeah.
It's off not brand. On brand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I'll do something with that. Maybe I'll get a cheese protein sponsor.
Yeah.
You know?
If the numbers start going down, you know, just start drinking more gravy. It's very simple.
That's a good call. Or go the other way. Go to gravy fans.
Gravy demographic. I got to believe Wisconsin is one of the highest consuming states of gravy in the U.S.
I would think, honestly, I want to say it's potentially not Wisconsin. I think it might be Michigan because Michigan has the bridge in Windsor that goes right to Canada. And we all know that poutine in Canada, that's where the gravy train really is.
Okay.
So I wonder if there's a pipeline.
But the gravy's probably taxed if you're coming over the border. You can't just bring
smuggling
truckloads
it,
of
dude.
Gravy.
Sure you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you smuggle it. If the first few barrels are something like cocaine, they're never going to know you're
distract.
Bringing gravy over.
Yeah. Yeah. Cocaine. Yeah. Okay. And when you say underground gravy train, do you think it's an actual underground or do
no,
you think it's just like boards in the floor of the truck where the gravy's hidden underneath?
Yeah. By underground, I mean like over the road.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So above ground. Yeah.
Well,
and not even a train, semi of sorts.
Yeah. Semi.
So an above ground gravy semi, not. But it would be good if it were a train.
Nonetheless, I still think gravy would be a great product for your merch store. Wisconsin has like a top five gravy consumer.
It's got to be.
Charlie B's gravy.
Do you like gravy?
No.
I'm not a big gravy fan.
Yeah. No.
Who, like, I don't like poutine.
No, it doesn't sound good. Poutine. Something wrong there.
I think there is something wrong there. I mean, do you like, have you had poutine in Canada?
Vladimir poutine?
No, dude, do you know what I'm talking about, poutine?
Is it gravy or is it cheese-covered fries?
Yeah, it's gravy-covered fries. There's cheese involved,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, no, I'm not interested.
You
I
get,
mean, fries
you,
are, God love fries, but they're devastating. Like, you know, I'm sure you've had a fry blackout being from Wisconsin, you know, at a supper club. You just wake up. All your fries are gone. It's a tough feeling. Like it takes the whole day to bounce back. Imagine if there's gravy on top of the fries. Like that's not a joke.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm losing a whole Canadian fan base just talking smack about poutine, but I just don't like it.
Do you have a decent following in Canada?
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Neither do you, by the way. So
all right.
That's a bummer. Let's chit chat about music. You got you've been in this business a long time, and you started in very unconventional ways. You know, though, between exits, I mean, you went to Vietnam. What? Where did all this come from?
So I was in Madison, Wisconsin. I had a band there, and then that kind of fell apart. Like, it just wasn't fun. You know, people go to college and all your friends move away, and just the band was no fun. So I moved to Vietnam. Like that was just, I was just like, I'll just get a backpack. I can live on $5 a day and travel around Vietnam with a guitar and book like makeshift gigs. And I did that, and I ended up just loving it so much.
You're just going to have to not speed over that whole decision making process. How old are you and where have you been in life to this point? Because this is a very interesting decision to make.
Yeah. So yeah, the more the time goes on, the more weird it seems. It felt so like the thing to do, like normal at the time, like, yeah, I'll just move to Vietnam. Why not? But I had been working in basically a bar band in college. You know, I stashed some dough aside, and then I traveled all around Asia, and Vietnam was just like my favorite place that I stopped on the trek. So I was just like, well, I'll try to live here for a year. It's cheap. I have tons of time to work on art. I have access points to all these weird, cool places in Southeast Asia. I can travel. I can get flights for $25. So I remember vividly sitting at a cafe in Saigon, like with all the thousands of motorbikes rushing by. You're just breathing in gasoline, you know, drinking the demon toxic Vietnamese coffee, which is super strong. It's like crack. And I called my dad on Skype at the time because Skype was big.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, hey, Pops, I really want to try living in Vietnam for a year. I can work as a guitar teacher. I can play in a couple different bands. I can hustle some voice work. And much to my surprise, he was just like, yeah, man, go for it, you know. And he was really supportive. And surprisingly, my mom was too, because she worries big time. And I ended up staying for 2 years. I just kept getting work, and I had all these weird, odd jobs. And I did commercial music production for like TV and film in Vietnam. So I'd get, like, my commercials would like play before James Bond in the movie theaters. And
that's so cool.
My friends would be like, dude, your tampon commercial is playing before James Bond. I'm at the movies right now. And I made decent money doing commercial jingles for tampon ads, actually.
Dude,
for a national TV campaign in Vietnam.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah. And so you just, so you had visited there before, and then you knew roughly that you could make it. You could make it cheap, and you went there and you made it. You made it cheap, and you made a lot of music.
It was great. Yeah, I mean, it was great for 2 years. I definitely lost my mind after a bit, because you just kind of miss home, and you're kind of living on Mars. It's like this just strange alternate reality, and nothing, you don't feel like you can have like a stamp on the culture or like really fully integrate into the community. You know, it's like, I wasn't going to learn Vietnamese. It's just, it's full on. It's tough. So, it became time to move on. And
wait, you lived there 2 years. You didn't learn any Vietnamese.
I mean, you know, 10 basics, you know, Xin chào, come on, dum roi. Tough language, all very tonal. Like,
yeah,
you could say a word 5-6 different times, and it would be the same word, but it would mean all different things. And you'd think you were saying a word correctly, and the people would look at you like, what?
Yeah.
What? So it was, yeah.
Why does this guy need to take a when he's ordering coffee?
Yeah, you know? No. Yeah. They're nice. They give you the benefit of the doubt. Like, and they're sweet people. They're fun. There's this little this kid who ran the motorbike parking in the basement of our apartment. And he was like 14, and he never wore a shirt. He would just lay in this hammock. And then when our motorbikes would pull up to park, he would jump out of the hammock and come take your money. But my roommate Jackie and I, we were the only two white people in the whole building. So he got so excited when he saw us, because we were like this weird freak show.
And how old again? 40?
This kid was 14, and, you know, we're 22, 23 at the time.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. Well, you get some good memories. How was it for the creative process for your own music? How did you feel what that whole experience was?
I thought it was really good. I mean, you know, the big thing with creating stuff is just time. You need time.
Mm-hmm.
And I never had time in the States at that, because I'm just like, I had like six different weird odd jobs. I was just hustling all day to kind of make ends meet, you know, at this point making $7 an hour, $6.50 an hour. So it was great. Like, and all my friends had time because the cost of living was lower. You could work for, you know, you could work 20 hours a week, make a decent living, and then you'd have time to work on arts or goof off. Or, I mean, there's a lot of kooks over there. You kind of have to be halfway nuts to be a foreigner living in Vietnam. So I met tons of weird people, and they'd all have like weird entrepreneurial hustles. Like, you know, I don't know, a guy, I don't know, he'd be like selling like craft jump ropes or something, some guy from Atlanta, but he was like trying to do it in Vietnam because it was cheaper to produce. I don't know. But you'd meet tons of crazy, weird people, and it was great. Like, the hangs were awesome. And as a fellow weird person myself, I felt like, for a while, I felt a lot more at home there because you're just around other people doing it differently, you know?
Totally, totally. But eventually you decided it's too weird for too long and you had to come back.
Is oh, that basically yeah. It? That was like the worst mental health of my whole life, like trying to get out of Vietnam. And like, because I knew I wanted to do music full time, but not from like a teaching guitar perspective. Like, I knew I wanted to make my own records and tour on them and, you know, sell them out of the back of my car at shows and stuff. And like, that wasn't going to happen living in Asia. So yeah, I moved back to the US. I just I got in my car and just started doing tours all over America, just DIY tours, playing punk squats, basements, weird like house parties, like attics like this, but not nice. Like, this is like a nice attic, you know, like pizza boxes, Bud Light, you know, crust punk hipster houses where I would make like, you know, $51 and sell one record. But I was like, hey, that was more than I made in my internship, so that's a good start. And, you know, you start to make a little more dough each year, and it starts to make more sense. You cut out the crappier gigs, and then you add better ones, and you kind of, you know how that goes. You develop your, improve your circuit.
Yeah.
You know, I've never reached any sort of grand acclaim or massive mainstream success or critical mass or whatever, but it has, at least the trajectory's been like this, you know, which makes it like encouraging, you know.
Well, and you've gotten a lot of great praise along the way, and you made a lot of great music along the way, and you know, that is kind of an interesting thing to note, because the music industry as a whole is just a very weird cookie to crack.
It's brutal. Yeah.
And I feel like it's almost gotten more brutal, even though the access to creating music, but even though that bar has come down, mm-hmm. I feel like breaking through has gotten much harder. And maybe that just makes sense. There are more people making music. There's just so much stuff consuming us.
And it's not like comedy is having a renaissance right now. I feel like comedy is hot. Yeah. Comedy's big. Live music is what it is. It's like your average person doesn't really go seek out a random live band on a Friday, Saturday. You know, you're like your local corporate accountant. Like, I feel like live music in general is kind of a bit of a niche thing. I hope it has some sort of massive renaissance, kind of like comedy is having right now. But I mean, society is not set up for you to make money on music. It's just not. This isn't Canada. It's not France. You don't get a living wage to play music. So if you can make money doing it, you're kind of defying the laws of like the system, which is kind of cool. But I think it's important for bands out there doing it to like pat themselves on the back and like be like, all right, we're doing all right. You know, this is it's not an easy thing. We need to be okay with ourselves that we sold 49 tickets in Ohio on a Wednesday. That's not bad. And there's not a ton of bands doing that.
Hey, so, on a Wednesday, that's a tough night. Well, okay, but I kind of want to dive into this a little bit, because I think it's pretty interesting for just fans of music out there understanding how the music industry works and understanding how maybe the music that is being recommended to them is recommended to them, and what it means for hearing new, good, original music. Like, the way the music industry is set up, to my understanding, having only dipped a toe into it, is that you can go one of two ways. You can create a traditional album and you can push it and try to get record sales for that and vinyl sales. Vinyl is coming back, and CDs. People are still selling CDs, even though most people don't have CD players.
CDs are toast, I think.
They're done too.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And then the other thing is you can put out merchandise and all that sort of stuff, but then it's getting it on Spotify or Apple Music. But really, the success of a lot of these things is dependent upon two things. One, either your social media presence, or two, your ability to know somebody at Spotify or at Apple to get you on a playlist. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I think that's definitely partially true. I mean, we've never cracked the algorithm on Spotify. So we've never been one of those bands that can just like put out songs and it reaches like 500,000 people, you know. So that can be discouraging. And you know, I mean, there's still gatekeepers as much as we want to think that you can just do everything your own on your own without a gatekeeper. You know, I mean, it certainly helps to have somebody who's a champion of your work on the inside at the Spotify offices. But, you know, there was that article that came out a couple of years ago that Pharrell or it was like you get $4,000 for a million plays was how the math equated to, which, I mean, it's just not sustainable. So, I mean, we never expect, we get our little $50, $100 checks from Spotify. We never expect anything from it. To us, that's just found money because we just, it's just a, it's what it is. It's like, it's not going to be a factor for us. So we got to go out. We got to play live. We really have to, we live or die by the merch table. We have to sell shirts. We have to sell records. I mean, that's just so critical. And just fans have, I feel like fans have, and listeners have more power than ever on like bands and comedians. It's like, you know, if you're playing a small club, two or three or four extra ticket sales, like that goes a long way for the band, you know, and those people all buy a shirt. It's like, that's, you know, that's a palatable difference and also a boost to morale, you know? So, yeah.
So
we appreciate people who come out. It's huge.
Yeah. Coming out and supporting. So when you say also, that CDs are done, that I just bought it.
How many did you buy for your?
I mean, I bought some because, you know, I was advised to. But I was also like, who even listens to CDs? I feel like people are buying the CDs. I feel like they have a low cost, like a dollar, you know. But I just feel like that ends up adding a lot of plastic to the ocean at some point.
Oh, it's and a frisbee.
I know. But so there's just no market for CDs. Or do you even print CDs?
I mean, we have up until now, and even 3 or 4 years ago, like pre-Panda, they were still going all right, where it was like still worth printing them, or we'd do a run of 1,000 or something. But now it's like, we'll sell a couple maybe at a show. I guess maybe the last phase of 90s cars that had them is phased out.
I know.
Those cars are in the junkyard, and that might literally be the difference of people buying our CDs or not.
I think that is it. Yeah. I mean, because now you have to wait for CDs to get old enough to be cool again.
Like, do you think that's going to happen?
No, because there's something very nice about a vinyl, the sound of vinyl. CDs never had that.
And the jewel case, you just want to smash it. You know, you want to, we call it roadside records, where you like, you take a CD out you don't like, you just throw it out the window. Roadside records, sign them to roadside.
Oh, that's fine.
Goner.
What about, like, you know, the way TikTok launches music? Like, what's the view of that from your standpoint as a, you know, someone who takes a craft seriously? Because it feels like at one point the game was make a great album. Then the game became make a great single. Now the game is make a great, like, 10 to 30 second hook that other people can replicate. And then that causes your song to blow up.
Yeah, well, man, I should be asking you that question, because you're pretty good at that stuff. And Colleen, you're awesome at TikTok and stuff. I just started getting into it. I hired someone to help cut up clips for me.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kylie. She's been really good at cutting up clips. But I haven't hacked that. I'm only like a couple months into being on that platform.
So, oh, are you? Okay.
So what do you think? You got any advice for getting our dismal TikTok numbers up?
Can you dance?
Yeah, I can dance.
Start dancing.
Okay.
Can you shake your ass?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, that's a good start. That's a very good start.
I don't have a lot of shame.
Well, even better.
Yeah.
Actually, I think you have a lot of potential, kid.
But do you ever watch like your colleagues or comrades, or just watch TikTok in general? And even as someone with with very little shame, I watch some of that and I cringe, and I'm like, I could never do that. It's just too brutal.
That's where you're wrong. That's actually where you're
wrong.
That's
why our numbers
are
shot.
Gonna do that.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what outfit are you wearing today?
I have an old 88 gym sweatshirt, and I have a nice sweatshirt that my ex-girlfriend helped me pick out from Kohl's in 2010. When I used to dress like a paper boy and didn't have any fashion sense. So,
and where are your jeans from?
jeans I bought in South Africa for $9 on the last tour of South Africa, weirdly enough. And they're pretty heavy duty.
And where are these your
good,
shoes from?
Are these like good TikTok jeans?
Where are your shoes from?
The shoes are from the stuff store. I don't remember which one.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Now you're going to take all that crap you just told me, set up your camera, hit play, and tell everybody that. And that's your second video. Get ready with me, okay?
Okay.
And here's your third video. You have to get really emotional about something that happened to you in your life. Set up your camera, think about it, understand that you've already processed it and it's not worth going back to, but then you have to start acting like you're still upset about it and just really cry very, very hard and shake and tremble and stuff.
Play up my depression.
Play up the depression, put a soft sound underneath, and then some kind of like hopeful, pretentious quote above, like, just keep going.
Like a quote by The Rock?
A Rock quote could work.
What about, like, a Kevin Hart quote?
Or,
like, shoot for the moon, because even if you miss, you'll fall amongst the stars.
That could work.
Okay.
I see potential for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then beyond that, just copy what everybody else is doing. Just, you know, like how in grade school they say, don't be a follower. That it's good to be a leader.
They teach you to be a sheep in grade school.
Well, okay.
That's so contradictory.
Do you know how in life you're supposed to be a leader?
Okay.
On TikTok, you're supposed to be a follower.
Okay.
Okay. So if you can, by that I mean they have trends and you just follow the trends.
Yeah.
And then you're on the platform, you give it all your data, it steals your data, and then it's owned by the Chinese government.
Nice.
And then eventually, if you want to run for president one day, they'll just go to your file and just take all the stuff you've ever done on your phone that is somewhat embarrassing and drop it.
So after they harvest your soul, is there any way to like get another soul, or can you re-up on soul, or are you just done?
Here is the good part. Okay. By the time they have enough time to steal your data and drop it and ruin your reputation, you can be like, no, it was AI.
Okay, nice.
And so you're fine.
That's good. That's the big plus of fake videos now. You can just blame everything on that.
Connecting with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK, Amory's radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. The border dispute continues between Texas and the Biden administration after Texas on Friday defied a federal deadline to allow federal agents into a park near the border. Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas said earlier Friday the state is doing what it needs to do.
Well, I would say to President Biden, you say you want to secure the border, you can prove it by getting out of our way here. You don't need to be here.
There were nearly 250,000 arrests at the Mexican border in December. The border, a major campaign issue, and today President Biden's campaigning in South Carolina. On the Republican side, South Carolina is where former President Trump hopes to knock Nikki Haley out of the race. He's campaigning today in Nevada, a day after a New York City jury ordered him to pay a writer $83 million in defamation damages. He's vowed to appeal. And the U.S. and Iraq held a first session of talks in Baghdad aimed at winding down the U.S. coalition in Iraq. This is ABC News.
The Bucks lose at home to Cleveland. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Cavaliers beat the Bucks 112-110 at Fiserv Forum. Bucks interim head coach Joe Prunty after the loss.
You know, you got to get a flow, and meaning set screens, hard cuts, get the ball moving side to side so that you can get downhill. If we can move them side to side, as opposed to, there was quite a few times where we had long possessions or we got late into the shot clock, but it wasn't because the ball was moving side to side. It was because maybe we just ran one action and we didn't create a problem and we pounded it too much.
After the game, the Bucks officially announced that Doc Rivers has signed his deal as the team's new head coach. He'll hold a press conference. College basketball, the Badgers cruise to an 81-66 win over Michigan State. The Badgers' AJ Storr on how he scored 28 points.
Really just playing off my bigs. They like to double the post a lot, so it leaves me open to either catch and shoot or make a quick drive to the basket, really.
That's Wisconsin's AJ Storr. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Some fog to start the day. Cloudy skies, 37 this afternoon. For tonight, patchy fog, cloudy skies, 33. For Sunday, cloudy with a high near 36. On Monday, partly sunny, highs around 38. For Tuesday, chance of rain, 37. Right now, 31 degrees.
Some days, my active psoriatic arthritis makes it hard to get in the game. Now, the ball is in my court, thanks to treating my skin and joints with SkyRizi, Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults. Nothing is everything. SkyRizi helps with less joint pain, stiffness, swelling, and fatigue. For those who also have plaque psoriasis, 90% clearer skin is possible with just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to SkyRizi. Serious allergic reactions and an increased risk of infections or a lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, your doctor should check for infection and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms, such as fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you plan to or recently received a vaccine.
With SkyRizi, there's nothing like clearer skin and better movement, and that means everything. Ask your doctor today about SkyRizi and visit SkyRizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Outgoing Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. The way I joke about it is I'm probably not doing my job right if somebody's not ticked off at me most of the time.
The only way you can do it is if you have that steadfast commitment to doing justice. That tension's built into it, and that's quite frankly what makes the job just so phenomenal and exciting and fun.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Weeknights at 6 p.m.
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I was proud to be a soldier.
I told the truth and got kicked out.
And so I thought to myself, I'm taking this rule down.
If you're an LGBTQ plus veteran, your memories are important too. Share your story with the Library of Congress Veterans History Project, where firsthand accounts from U.S. military veterans are preserved and made accessible for researchers and future generations. Visit loc.gov/vets to submit your stories, photographs, and documents today.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop.
From the Mississippi to the Apple and points eastward, you're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK,
Amory's radio station.
If you're just tuning in to Civic Media, I'm Charlie Behrens, and here is this week's Cripescast. You know, another thing I wanted to talk to you about is the book you wrote.
Because Chicken Soup for the Soul, or the other one?
The other one. The one about mental health.
Oh, yes.
And it's a longer title, what is the title?
It's Hard to Be a Person... Defeating Anxiety, Surviving the World, and Having More Fun.
You can see why I had a hard time remembering that. But you got good praise from that.
Hit the keywords.
I put a quote on the back.
Yeah, that's right.
Sucker.
Thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
It's gotten me tremendous scene cred. People are like, well, I'll take it to bookshops, like, see if they want it. And they'll look at it. They'll be like, oh, it looks pretty cool. I don't know. And then they'll be like, ooh, Charlie Behrens approved. I'll take 9 copies.
Oh, shut up.
Thanks.
Shut up.
You're making me some bonus change.
The other thing is you sold out of your first print on that. Did you not?
Yeah, we've sold through actually 3 pressings of it.
3 pressings. That's pretty cool. What made you want to write this book for folks who haven't seen it, may want to take a look?
It started as a complete joke. It was like just like a pando project, like doing drawings, kind of making fun of my own depression or anxieties with like little jokes with hopefully like a tidbit of something useful in them. But my girlfriend at the time, Anna, she was like, hey, you should make a book out of this. This is like pretty, this could be something. And so I just kept going. I kept making drawings, kept trying to write little dumb ham-fisted jokes around it. Because I didn't want to be like, you know, like I didn't want to like pound wisdom down people and be like, you must do this now. So it's like half ham-fisted humor and half like utilitarian, like useful things that have made me feel like less of a nutcase in my head or helped me chill out over the years. And yeah, by the end of like 3 years, I had enough drawings and jokes to make a book out of it. And now it's a book.
Now, have you kind of, because you got like a scotch of the anxiety situation.
Oh, yeah.
Scotch of the depression situation.
Oh, yeah.
A scotch of anything else?
Well, I don't, yeah, probably. I mean, they say, yeah, I don't know. More anxiety than depression. But when I get the depression, like my vision stops, like I can't see color anymore and everything just black and white. But these days I have a new girlfriend recently, and that's been helpful.
Gets you out of your own head, you know, man. Congratulations.
So the depression is definitely less. And also not being on tour. I feel like going on tour, as much as I love it and as much as it is rewarding and fun and I love the challenge of it, it is like the number one cause of my anxiety. And it's nice to not be on tour. And that puts me in a very weird predicament because my job is the thing that causes me the most mental health issues.
That's interesting. What, I mean, is it just a sleeping aspect, not getting enough sleep, or is it just like needing to perform at a high level every night? Like what's kind of the root of that thing, you think?
I think the root is like, do you feel like you have like a stimulation-o-meter where it's like you can only be in public and around like a ton of stimulation so long before... Anyway, that's how I feel. Like my body and my brain shut down. After a while, I get so burnt out that if I see people like coming up to talk to me, or if I'm in a room with just too much stimulus, like I just, my brain stops working and I can start to feel it physiologically. And like the anxiety kind of manifests in my fingers and my toes and a lot in my neck and my chest, like where the vocals are. And then I start to worry about voice loss. And then I like feel like my brain puts me in kind of like a straitjacket and I can't. And then I have to go like take a nap or sit in a corner for an hour.
Yeah, I think I definitely understand that. I got done doing a show last week or whatever. And my buddy Adam Grohl was there. He's like, he had a buddy that wanted to go to this bar. And I physically couldn't do it.
Of course.
Yeah. I couldn't do it. Not because I didn't want to or whatever, but I was at my max level of.
Yeah.
Because you have a lot of first conversations.
Right.
You know, which is great. And you always love meeting people and you meet fans or you meet other peers or whatever. But and I think this is something that's not just unique to people in the performance. It's you can only have so many small and small talk is kind of doesn't just define it, but really a first conversation of you don't know if it's going to last 1 minute or like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And you just can't tie your boat to another dock like that. You
and
know?
Sometimes you feel like you're bored in the conversation, thus you're worried about like the other person being bored.
Yeah.
Even though they might be excited to talk to you, they're like, oh, where were you on tour last night? And then you're like, in your head, you're like, oh, I don't know. I can't remember. Kansas City. Am I boring you? I don't want to let you down socially.
There's pressure because you were so grateful for anybody who likes our stuff in this deal because it allows us to do the thing that we've always wanted to do.
Of course.
And then so there is that pressure of am I treating them good enough?
Yeah, I worry about letting people down so much to a fault. You know, that's kind of a classic problem for people.
Classic,
I think,
Midwest people pleasing.
Yeah. There you go.
Oh man,
do you deal with much depression, anxiety much? What's your kind of brain?
Oh, I got a hodgepodge. Yeah, I got a whole hodgepodge. I mean, I can. I got some. What do you call it? Some topography in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where it can go up. You got some mountains, some valleys, some these little gorges.
What do the gorges look like for Charlie Barons?
Try to jump over them, but sometimes you miscalculate and you go down them.
Don't dodge the question, Barons.
I just did. What are you doing? This isn't your podcast.
Great dodge.
You know?
I'm used to hosting. It's great to not have to host.
How
it's
do you think
easier.
I'm doing hosting?
Pretty good. Yeah.
You're judging it?
Oh, no. I'm just trying to not bomb. You know,
you're not bombing. Honestly, I'm really enjoying this. Oh, and we have some time. I'm going ice
as
fishing.
You start to text mid convo.
I wasn't texting. I was looking at the time.
I heard you going
guy.
Ice fishing with your uncle.
Yeah,
but not for leisure.
No, I am going for leisure, but I am also attaching some work aspect.
That's
to
not
it.
Leisure. How what percentage of the ice fishing do you film versus get to turn the camera off and just chill?
I haven't. Are you saying on a typical ice fishing venture?
Yeah, this one with Uncle Barons today.
My Uncle Joel. I'll be able to chill for a good few hours.
Nice.
Which would be nice. The video I'm shooting is it's get ready with me.
Okay. TikTok like classic.
That TikTok I was just telling you about, I'm doing it, but I'm doing a parody of it. Because actually, that's another thing you could do on TikTok is just parody all this crap. I mean, I was being facetious when I told you to do that stuff. Obviously, but parodying it, I find enjoyable. I think that's the thing with all these like platforms is like, you know, improv obviously. You have a prompt. It's a different game. And you just sort of, you play that game. And if you treat social media like it's just a different prompt, it's a different game, then you have less vile hatred toward it.
Okay, nice, nice.
I found.
Nice. Do you when you, like, the lead up to a sketch or a video you have to film, do you feel like, do you look forward to it? Or are you like, oh, this is something I have to do? Does it feel uncomfortable? Or are you like, oh, I'm pumped. Let's go make some comedy.
No. So I am pumped after we shoot it and we have a great thing. It really depends on the script and the sketch. Like that sketch that you and I shot.
Yeah.
I felt pretty good about that.
That was fun,
but there was some anxiety going into it of like, I want to make sure that this, the words that we wrote on this thing came out. Kellen can tell you that we do so many videos that I look at the end of the day, I'm like, nah, it's not good enough.
That's a bad feeling. Yeah.
It was a miscalculation in what was funny and what wasn't. But also my performance could be off. So many things could be off.
Yeah.
And it's just better to go back to the drawing board. So you don't want to waste that time. You don't. Do I have something in my nose?
No, I feel like I have something in my nose. You're good. Am I good?
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. I mean, when nice we shot nuts. That sketch together, like I was just like, I mean, my friends and I, we'll make skits, just improv, that'll be so stupid, just off the cuff. But I was like so impressed with your, like, the structure of how you run everything. And, you know, Colleen's there punching stuff up and she's got the notes and the cameras and the lights. It was awesome. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Major leagues.
You know, but that was actually a big production. We haven't gone that big with lights stuff on nice. A different sketch, but. That was a lot of fun, man. We should do something like that again.
I would love to. Yeah. Have you done like a like a pretentious barista versus Midwest guy yet?
No, have we? You look like a pretentious barista.
Can I be the barista? Actually, yeah. A couple of years ago, a girl I really liked told me I had a prick face, quote unquote. And that was tough. I liked this girl. And which prick face, that sounds like a level up from resting bitch face. So I can play the pretentious barista. Yeah,
and let me just say, I was not trying to insult you. I'm just saying you got a quaff.
No offense taken.
You could quaff. You could play up the pretent. I mean, okay, let's be honest. Tell me the difference between a pretentious barista and a musician. You know, a pretentious barista is trying to look like a musician. So you are a non-pretentious musician, but you can also play a pretentious barista.
So I'm hired.
And now I'm going to have a bunch of baristas pissed off at me.
You lost the Canadians and the baristas.
I lost the Canadians and the baristas. I'm not saying all baristas.
Pretentious baristas don't know they're pretentious. They're not listening to this.
Oh, that's true.
You know what I mean?
They're like, that's not me.
Yeah.
And if you're offended by this, then like you're the problem.
Yeah, you're safe. I mean, it's a great, beautiful blind spot. So we're good.
Well played.
That's a funny bit, though, barista versus dad.
Yeah.
Like, you'd play dad character going in to try to get a drink. And then, like, it's like we don't have to do Starbucks, but it's like all the different sizes. Yeah.
I just want a black coffee.
You just want a gas station coffee?
Yeah.
That's why I wrote it down.
Gas station coffee. Okay, yeah.
We'll write it out.
And I want to do this where I come in and I say, hey, how are you doing? And you go, actually, I'm not doing so great. I'm like, I wasn't seriously asking. Yeah. I'll do a coffee black,
yeah.
You know, or something like where I just take all the normal things you would say to a barista and then you would just find a way to make it a whole deal.
Oh, yeah. You're going to hate me. It's going to be great.
This is a great idea.
Thanks.
Yeah. Let's
and
do
then
it.
You just go through all like the different blends and you give it such like personified, like this Venezuelan blend like you can just really make it super dramatic.
Yeah.
It could just like, it feels like a slap on the face, like at a walk on the beach. Yeah.
And then it just cuts to me like,
we don't have half calf.
Yeah.
This is going to be good.
Yeah. Actually, that happened to me once at this really cool coffee shop, cool guy coffee shop in Walker's Point. I was like pretty jacked, but I still wanted the afternoon buzz, you know? And I was like to the barista, he had like a ponytail. He kind of looked like Fabio and like his chest hair was poking out. And he looked really cool and like coffee-ish. And I was like, hey, could I please get like a half calf, you know, cappuccino? And he just looked at me pissed off. He was like, we don't have that here. We don't do that. And I was like, well, do you have anything like, and then he goes to his barista. He's like, hey, Jamal, do we have any lighter, like, can you make a half, decaf, half regular? He's like, oh, like a half calf. And the guy was so pissed. And I was like, yeah, Jamal, I'll take the half calf right in his face.
Ah, that's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Well, I want to talk about the Milwaukee music scene.
Sure.
And kind of like, you know, you've been in and out of it physically, you know, but you've kind of been, you know, a staple of it for some time, you know, and how do you feel like it's evolved over the past few years? And where do you see it going?
I mean, I think it's a great time for the Milwaukee music scene. You know, there's this whole batch of younger kind of indie rock bands that, you know, they all go to each other's shows. They play at each other's shows. They're selling out Turner Hall. So that's really cool. And they're hitting it at the right time. Like the kids in their 20s, they're going to shows every weekend. So I think live music in that sense is stronger than it was than I think maybe I was coming up or when I was in my early mid 20s. I was always on the road, so I never felt like fully a part of the music scene. I was always kind of popping in and out, and you know, I don't know how locally how people, you know, how sometimes when you leave your hometown, you never know if people are going to root for you or be like, I secretly hope you fail.
Yeah.
And that could just be my inner anxiety just making that up. But I don't know. I feel like I'm kind of one toe in, one toe out, but there's a lot of talent in this town and it certainly seems like a good time for it.
That's funny. I guess I don't view you as one toe in, one toe out, but maybe that's just an outsider perspective. Cause I feel like, you know, I hear you on, you know, the radio, 88.9, you know, and then when I'm having conversations with people about, great Milwaukee musicians, you're usually part of that conversation.
Oh, cool. It's good to hear that. Yeah.
Do you see that, you know, Milwaukee could, like, you have Chicago, right? And that's obviously a great scene, almost similar to Nashville in terms of country music. You know, you have Chicago kind of has its own unique identity when it comes to music and all that sort of stuff. And maybe I'm thinking of it with comedy now as well, but you're sort of the performing arts at that standpoint. And then you have like Nashville to Memphis. Do you think Milwaukee has a relationship that could blossom into like Chicago, Milwaukee in the same way Nashville, Memphis?
Like an alliance?
Well, almost like they offer something unique or something I think Milwaukee offers something unique. I don't know if like the rest of the country sees it that way. You know what I mean? In the way the rest of the country sees Memphis is like,
sure. Yeah. I think, you know, Milwaukee and Chicago, I think they have like a beautiful thing with like that just hardworking salt of the earth, blue collarism. And I think that translates into the music as well. I think like there's a lot of good kind of crunchy, gritty rock bands, like imperfect kind of damaged sounding music. And that is like, you know, I think when people think of Milwaukee, they either A, have never heard of it, B, think of it from like Wayne's World or think of it as a joke, or C, don't know what it is. So I don't know.
That's exactly
what I guess. I just said A and C, but like Buzz from Home Alone, A, 2.
Yeah.
C. I don't know.
That's a great callback.
You know?
Yeah, so great reference.
But to that point too, it doesn't seem like any bands really blow up anymore. Maybe one or two a year are kind of like indie darlings that really explode nationally. So I think music is recognized locally and regionally. Like we try to like, I feel like we do really well regionally. And then we do like a national tour once every other year. And our shows on the coasts, some of them are good and some of them aren't good. But I don't know if Milwaukee like has a brand on the map where people think of Milwaukee. I think people still think of the Violent Femmes because they're like the biggest band ever come out of Milwaukee.
Yeah.
And they're a great representation of the town, just like a really like crusty kind of lo-fi, you know, PBR drinking band, you know, like folk punk. So
yeah.
That's cool to have that. But I, you know, I couldn't tell you the last band to really break out of Milwaukee on like a national or international scale. I don't know if that really happens anymore.
You've opened for the Violent Femmes, haven't you?
Yeah, they've taken me on tour a few times.
What's that experience like?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the best to like, you know, be the support band. It's like, all I have to do is be on time, not piss off the headliner, and not...
From the heart of the St. Croix Valley, we're in touch with you. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
Hey, everybody, this is Aaron from the Todd Allbaugh Show. Todd will be back from his trip around the state on Monday, and we'll round up the weekend in news. Join us from noon to 2.
someone we love, like the favorite lyric in our favorite song. You can't imagine life without them. Cancer screening tests can help keep the person you love around longer by detecting changes before cancer develops, or catch it early when it may be easier to treat. And many tests are available for free or covered by insurance. It's time to sound like a broken record. Tell all your friends and family, I love you. Get screened. Visit cancer.org/get screened to learn more.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.